Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Danny, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday as we start a new month, July 1st, and it's a holiday week, Danny.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people already left, I think. The traffic was kind of lighter today.
It was about the same for me.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, eventually they'll be out of here, yeah. I'm hoping, because on the holiday I'm supposed to be driving out to Long Beach and for a barbecue and all that stuff, and I'm like, my God, you know, I mean, this past weekend I was invited to something in Long Beach. I did not go because the drive would have been an hour and a half.
Yeah, Long Beach is pretty far.
Yeah, and the traffic is just, I mean, again, the distance doesn't bother me, but to drive bumper to bumper makes me mental.
Yeah.
So I'll just not even go.
Yeah, that sucks.
How you doing?
I'm okay.
Yeah, did you have a good weekend?
It was all right.
All right.
Yeah.
You're not talking.
I know. I just found out something that just like altered my mood for the rest of the day. So I'm probably not going to be in the best of spirits. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like just now?
Yeah. Like literally right as I was pulling in.
Oh, very nice. Well, we'll try to entertain you today, Danny.
Yeah, you go ahead and you go for that.
We'll make you, we'll have to make you laugh. Forget your problem. Listen, it can't be much worse than my problem with my mom dying, you know?
I mean, yeah, nothing's worse than that. So. Yeah.
And she's taking her time, too. I don't know what the hell's
going on. I mean, let her take her time. Jeez.
But not in this condition. You have to understand. She's not the same anymore.
I know, yeah.
You know, the nurse told me yesterday, she says, that woman in the bed, it's not your mother. That's what he told me.
Okay, well, he needs to shut up, number one.
No, because it's true. She's different. She's totally different now. I'm telling you, 1 foot out the door.
Yeah, poor thing.
Yeah, I know. We love being there, but she's hardly responding, you know. She seems comfortable, but that's about it.
Yeah.
You
know?
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not that you want your parent to die, but you also don't want to watch him like this either.
Yeah, right.
It sucks. So if it's the inevitable, why just prolong it, you know? But it's not up to us, right?
Yep.
So... whatever, but yeah, put things in perspective. It may not be as bad as it seems, you know?
No, it is, for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
But thank you. Thank you for trying.
Did you see? By the way, folks, we do have a special guest in the studio. We'll bring him on in just a second. If you want to watch us, as usual, we're on Facebook on LA Talk Radio's page, and you can see us there. Otherwise, you can stay here, and we love you just the same. We do have a filmmaker again today, so we're talking more about films. She is extremely excited. Did you at least have any feelings about Trump going to North Korea?
I didn't even know. So
didn't even
that's
know?
That's my feelings about it.
This is the first president ever to set foot in there.
Well, I mean, I did see somebody like post like him shaking hands,
yeah,
I guess. But I didn't know if that was old or new or what have you. So.
I know. But they actually made such a drama about it. There's an actual, like, concrete border.
Yeah.
You know, like a line, and you have to cross it.
Yeah.
It's so stupid, like two little kids. You know? Yeah. I draw a line in the sand and they'll cross it.
Yep.
But, man, that's been like a flashpoint for a long time. They call that area DMZ, you know, the demilitarized zone, and that's like the border between North and South Korea. There was a war, and ever since then there's been problems there. A couple more things. Movies, have you seen any movies this
weekend? I mean, nothing. I saw Annabelle this week, but nothing else really came out.
Right.
I think Spider-Man's coming out soon.
Oh. That Annabelle, after you mentioned it, now I'm seeing billboards everywhere for that movie.
Yeah.
She looks spooky, that doll, man.
I mean, she's creepy for sure. Yeah. But if you're like a kid and your parents brought you home, brought you that doll home, I'd be like, are you guys fucking insane?
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything with this doll.
Exactly.
Like, who goes to a store and says, this is perfect for my kid?
Yeah. And what's the likelihood of there being two, like, movies, scary movies with dolls in them coming out at the same time?
What's the other one?
Because that Chucky movie came out.
Yeah, that's not really scary, though.
No?
Nothing about it. I didn't scream. Like, but Annabelle, I screamed. Really? I know. The original Child's Play was scary as hell.
Yeah.
I said, this one, I think it was set up to be a comedy, but there's no comedy in it. I was like, they should have at least made it a comedy, like a comedic horror film or something.
But what would make you scream in a movie, like in Annabelle? What scared you?
Okay, like, for instance, there was a scene where the spirits got released, so their daughter was in a bedroom, and she heard, like, loud footsteps, so she, like, turned. And in the hallway, there was just like this. I just got goosebumps. And there was this lady in a long white dress walking down the hallway. And then she just stops. And then she turns and she faces the daughter. And it's like, just for a brief second, they're just staring at each other like, what's going on? And then the lady with the dress puts a knife out and starts charging at her. And I screamed. I screamed. Like, I think that stuff is scary. Chucky was more like, he killed the wife's boyfriend with a lawnmower, and it was just like his face coming off in the lawnmower. That's not scary to me. It's gross. So it's two completely different movies.
Yeah.
Annabelle, Conjuring, Insidious, they try to like scare you with like actual horror.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
So
interesting.
Yeah, but I haven't seen any movies, but I went out on Friday night and I stayed in on Saturday, and then I went out all day yesterday.
Okay, cool. And it was very hot, right?
It was really nice yesterday. I mean, I enjoy being hot. So,
yeah, that's true.
I'm the wrong person.
And plus, you're not in the hottest part of town either.
If
you were
here
at 100 degrees.
Yeah, it was like 90, though.
Yeah.
It was like 91 yesterday.
Yeah, well, where you were.
Yeah, yeah. I was at a pool party, so.
Yeah. Oh, nice. I love pool parties. Never get invited. But then again, I don't own a bikini, so why would they invite me?
Yeah, you can wear shorts. I wouldn't want to see you in a bikini either.
No, but I'm saying it's like guys are not particularly given access, I think. No.
Yeah, right. No.
Right?
No,
if you're a hot chick, it's easier.
Yeah, it's definitely easier for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right, we're going to bring in our guest who seems extremely bored, and we're going to bring him on board. We entertained the guest, but he was somewhere else until now. So we're joined by Dekel Berntsen. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Sure.
You know?
No, I wasn't bored at all.
That's fine. That's
I was
fine.
Thinking of the bumper to bumper. You know, the Tesla, it has like this mode when you're in on a traffic jam, you just click on a button. And
right. And
it
drives by itself. The Tesla does. Yeah.
But just for the, you can just use it when you're in a traffic jam.
Traffic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But you still want to get moving. That's my problem with the traffic, you
yeah.
know? But at any rate, Dekel, welcome to the show. You're a filmmaker, director. I would imagine you did more than just direct your films, right?
Yes, I wrote them and to a large extent also produced them. Yeah.
Very cool. How old do you think he is? He told me how old he is.
I don't know. I don't like that game.
No?
No.
Okay. I mean, I thought he was in his 20s. He tells me he's 40 years old. This
I
guy.
Mean, yeah, you yeah. definitely don't look 40.
He doesn't look
that.
40, right? Yeah. You look young, man. Good
but I would
you.
Say 30s. He definitely look like he doesn't look like he's in his 20s.
No,
that's not.
No,
not
no,
sure.
No,
well, maybe
okay.
in the beginning I thought it was.
But you definitely don't look 40. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, you kept young. Maybe from all your travels and everything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, maybe.
Wow. So you're originally from Israel, like I am.
Yep.
And we discovered this early on. So this is good always to meet someone from your tribe. Although there's so many Israelis here, it's not even funny anymore, you know?
But I think we are our own tribe. It's the tribe
right.
of the Israelis who don't live in Israel, which is potentially bigger than the tribe of people who live in Israel.
Right, yeah.
So.
I know. So do you live here or are you traveling these days?
No, so now I'm here. I'm traveling. I just came back from Palm Springs because my previous film, Ashmina, was screening in the Palm Film Short Film Festival.
Right. Your film is Ashmina? That's the name of it?
Yeah, so I actually have two films that are now doing the festival
circuit.
So
right.
one is called Ashmina, which I finished shooting last year in January.
Uh-huh.
And it premiered in the BFI London Film Festival in October.
Wow.
And then it screened in Aspen, Short Fest, and here, and a bunch of other festivals. And last month, my newest film premiered in the Cannes Film Festival as part of the official competition there.
Mm.
Yeah, very nice. Mm-hmm. What's the name of the new film?
So the new film is called Anna.
Anna.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that what they wrote here? They wrote something else. They wrote Adva.
Adva, because Adva is going to be my first feature, hopefully.
Oh, so this is something else.
No, it's not something else. It's all the same.
Oh, okay.
It's all the same.
Adva,
yeah, so
okay.
actually the...
So Anna is the second one. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So actually this film are not just separated films.
They're related to each other?
Yes. Yeah, so I didn't really go to film school. I signed up for film school and I did 3 months in the London Film School 3 years ago.
Right.
And it's quite expensive and the film was in a bit of a chaos when I was there. And I thought that, I don't know, I just felt it wasn't for me. Also because I'm older, even that I don't look older, but I am older. So I felt like it wasn't for me. So I just quit the school and decided I'm going to take the money that I would put into tuition into producing my own film.
Which is smart.
Very
smart. I think school is such a waste of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For you, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, hence him. So use that money to make a movie.
True. So yeah. So I think that many, until a few years ago, it did make sense. First of all, because the equipment was big and complicated and expensive. And it wasn't easy to find other people you wanted to make films with. So
right.
Film, you can't make a film alone. I mean, you can try, but that's crazy.
Yeah, but you need
a whole, at least a few people, if not a whole bunch of people. So people used to go to film school because they would get, you know, you'd get, first of all, theory, education about film history and whatever. And then you would find people that you could make films with.
Right. You can network.
In those places, today. You just can go on Facebook and say, oh, I want to make a film. I live here and there. Who wants to join me? And you will have 10 people who say, yeah, sure, let's meet and like make a film together. So, yeah, so there was a lot of sense in having film schools up until a few years ago. And, you know, it's kind of institutional. Of course, there's still film schools and people still sign up for them. And it's still very important part of the system. But when I was there, considering my age and my situation, I just felt after 3 months that I had enough. And I was actually in the Cannes Film Festival 3 years ago, just visiting there with a friend.
Right.
And I decided there, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to quit and go back to London and just make my own film. And then I started working on, and then I made my first film within 3 months. I produced, directed my first film.
Yeah. So you're making short films.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
right?
so then I was like, okay, what's next? I'm going to make another short film. But then I realized that it doesn't make sense to make short films. So a short film is like a business card. It's a calling card, right?
Right. Isn't that what they say?
Yeah.
It's like you're real.
So I told myself, if I'm making short films, if I'm going to now spend a few years making short films, why don't I make them somehow related to each other, connected to each other? So if I get a bunch of them, people could watch them one after the other and get an experience which is bigger than just watching them on their own.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm always trying to think. When I did my master's, I almost wrote my thesis, my master thesis. I convinced my classmates that we will write them on related topics so we would collect it into a book.
Okay.
And everybody thought it was a great idea. In the end, it didn't happen. But I always try to think out of the box, right?
Yeah.
So I came up with this idea to make a film that I will shoot in 5 different countries and each telling a story which in some way relate to each other. And so the idea was to make 5 segments, 5 shorts, films about women or girls in different countries and different situations and different backgrounds. And it made sense also from an economic point of view, from just money wise.
I see.
Because it's very expensive to shoot a film in London. And I was like, okay, and it's less interesting. It's also, I mean, you know, there's so many English speaking films out there. So like, why am I making a film in London if I could just take a plane, go to some interesting country where people don't make a lot of films? It's cheaper. It's more interesting. It's more interesting for me personally.
Right.
And I like I told you before, I was before that, I was in a long period of time. I was just traveling.
Traveling.
For 5 years.
And like after your military service,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You see, in Israel, everybody goes to the army at 18.
Mm.
When they get out at 21, they don't go to college straight. I mean, think about it. You know, it's not like here you go to college at 18. So you go to the military and then you're like, I'm not going to school right now. Let me travel.
Yeah.
So it's become like a rite of passage pretty much,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Almost everybody does that. And usually to the Far East or South America and things like that. So you chose which destination in the beginning?
South America.
South America.
Yeah. But I think it's very different than today, back in the day. But this started years ago. I mean, even my dad did that after the military service trip. He came to the States for a
really?
Month. Yeah. Wow. But in my time, 20 years ago, yeah, people would go to India and South America. Today still. But now, you know, they go everywhere. Like you see on Facebook, people going to Fiji and anywhere. People just trying to go where other people are not going to.
Right.
So, but if you travel in South America, we're talking about tens of thousands of Israelis.
Really?
Thousands, yeah. Yeah, in South America and Peru and everywhere. Wow. Yeah, anyway, so back to the films. So back to the films. So I was traveling for before I started this filmmaking adventure, and one of the places I've been to was Nepal. I went there for actually for a mountain climbing course. Yeah, it was a mountain climbing course preparation to climb the Everest.
The Everest, right?
And yeah. I was like, somebody told me about it. I was like, yeah, okay, cool. It sounded like a really cool thing to do.
Would you climb the highest mountain in the world?
No.
No, huh?
Zero interest.
Really?
Like so zero.
Why do people want to do this?
Yeah, it's like they almost want to die. Yeah.
So why do people? So that's a really good question.
It's like just to go to a barbecue and say, I climbed Mount Everest. I made it.
Right. So, true. So, and show pictures of Instagram. Like, yeah.
So yes and no. So this course that I did there was actually the first time that I did any kind of mountain climbing, which is a bit crazy because all the other people were very experienced.
Uh-huh.
And we climbed three mountains around Everest. That I think the highest one was 6,200 meters or something like that. And I got to know these people who two of them eventually went and climbed Everest. One of them had to go down the middle because it was a big earthquake a few years ago.
Wow.
And a girl that did climb up all the way to the top. And it was very interesting for me too. Why do people want to do that? Because I didn't go there intending to climb Everest. I went there to do the course just as an experience to climb mountains, but I did meet these people. And to me, it was also a very good question because it's so dangerous.
Yeah.
It is so dangerous to climb these mountains.
Right.
And it's literally, you know, you can challenge with yourself with a lot of other things which are extremely challenging.
Why would you
without the risk of dying
in a mountain?
On a mountain, and also from not from your mistake, because it can be easily that you climb a mountain and just and there's just an avalanche,
right,
or an earthquake.
Yeah. Something out of control.
It's not even your mistake.
Right.
It's like literally, like compared to skydiving. Like skydiving would be probably like statistically 10,000 times safer.
Really?
Yeah. Mountain climbing is really dangerous.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's been tons of movies on climbing Everest and all of them are very dramatic and very full of death.
I know. And the most recent thing that happened there, and that's the topic of his book, his film, by the way, it's so many tourists going there. They started having like traffic jams there. At the top, because everybody wanted to get there. There's too many people. So they take turns going to the top.
How do they get to the top?
By climbing. But all I'm saying is...
I'm so confused about what you're saying.
A traffic jam of people, not of cars.
Of people, not cars.
People. You see, there is a picture. It was just 2-3 weeks ago.
Right.
You see hundreds of people waiting to get to the top, take a picture, go down.
Exactly.
And because there is a window of just 2 or 3 days when the weather is perfect, so everybody's rushing to like start climbing, and it's not regulated properly.
People are so weird to me. I don't.
Right?
Yeah, I don't understand why you wake up in the morning. You're like, I got to rush to go climb this mountain that could potentially kill me.
Yeah. So
I can take a selfie for Facebook and Instagram.
But
wait in line in the middle of the middle of nature. Yeah. You know, stand in line to
and
get.
And if there's an avalanche, all of us are gonna die. But at least I could take a selfie of it first.
But wait, there is another side of it that when I did the course, we did climb this, you know, these mountains, and the experience is a great experience to challenge yourself with something that is so difficult for you and for me. It also, I did it for the first time. So what the first mountain that we climbed, it's such a crazy story. So first of all, you wake up at midnight because you want to get to the bottom of the mountain. You want to start climbing down. Just, you know, as soon as possible.
Dark, right?
So we had to start in midnight, walk for 6 hours until we got to the base
of the mountain,
of the actual mountain.
Whoa.
Then go up.
Uh-huh.
Then you get there after, you know, 12 hours or whatever. We probably got there by noon. And first of all, it's earlier, like 10 maybe. And then it's like, it's just, you see the most beautiful view that you can imagine.
You can imagine the air you breathe.
You see mountains, which are the tallest mountains in the world.
Yeah.
But you look at them from above because you're above them. So you look at mountains that are 5,000 meters high. I don't know how much is it.
You look down on them.
Right. And the colors of the sunrises and the sunsets, and you're there alone. We were just talking about it before we started.
Right. So that's pretty high. I mean, that's like 15,000 feet.
Yes. Yeah, so the Everest is 8,800, and that was 6,200. It's like still, you know, big difference, but it's still super high. Obviously.
Right. Right.
So there's not a lot of oxygen, so you have to walk really slowly, and you know, it's a more a mental challenge than a physical challenge.
I would imagine.
I would say it's probably both, actually.
Yeah. So, I'll take other challenges, though, but okay.
So what happened to me there?
But you see, you can't replace these memories. That's the thing, right?
No.
Yeah,
but what happened to me there...
Right.
So the thing is that because the oxygen levels are probably half than what they are on sea level... Mm. You're starting to lose it,
right.
Okay? I mean, you're starting to lose it, and you can lose it in a very serious medical way, but that you're starting to get liquids in your brain and whatever.
Wow.
But I didn't get that, but I when we reached the bottom of the mountain, before climbing, I was looking around. I didn't remember the names of the people in my group.
Really?
Who I spent two weeks with. Yeah.
So you're like lightheaded or something?
Lightheaded. I was so tired.
Wow.
And I just looked around and I was like, what's his name? What's this guy's name? What's his name? Like, oh, Tim.
Right.
And then like he said, okay, we have 5 minutes rest. And then like I collapsed and started eating. And then he's like, okay, we're starting to climb because other people are behind us and I don't want them to go in front of us. And I realized that if I'm not standing up and going, then I would just be left behind or whatever. So I just stood up and went before my friends.
Right.
Started to climb. I will show you pictures after. It's literally 300 meters of a wall, an ice wall, which is this
steep.
And I have pictures from a distance. You just see, you think it's ants on the wall.
Right.
And I started climbing. And God knows how I reached the top. I mean, because you have to. You have to reach the top because there's one line. There's literally one line. Everybody's climbing on the line.
You can't go down if you want to.
Is it like a staircase? Like, I'm so confused.
No, it's a mountain. But they do it like in a line, you know? So one behind it, the other, because it's pretty narrow and stuff.
You're connected to a line.
Right.
And you're standing. Your legs are on the mountain. And you're just pulling yourself. Up.
That sounds so unenjoyable.
No, it's wasn't so unenjoyable. But the feeling afterwards.
We're so fucking lazy.
Yeah. No, I just like, that's not what I want to do ever in life. Like, so when you get to the top, like, how do you guys get back down?
So that's the funny thing. You get to the top and it's such a beautiful view and it's such a feeling of triumph and you know, you made it. And then like you look around and then the guide goes, okay, we're starting to go down. You literally have 3 minutes on the top because it's dangerous because other people are coming up, the weather can change, right. You know, you're light-headed because of the oxygen. You just climbed another God knows how many meters up to the top.
Right.
And you just have to start climbing down. And that's where, I guess that's where a lot of the accidents actually happen.
Wow.
So then by the time you went down, it was maybe 4 p.m. or whatever. And I collapsed into the tent, with my clothes, everything. You don't, you know, and then you sleep for 24 hours straight.
Really?
And that just was the first mountain. We did three of them.
Jeez.
So, yeah. So actually, like, from a technical point of view, I think that mountain was more difficult than Everest. So Everest is not actually technically difficult to climb.
Okay.
It's just dangerous because of first of all, because of avalanches and the earthquakes that happen and the
maybe
weather.
Strong winds. Yeah.
But physically, it's almost like a hike.
Yeah.
So you just need to walk. There's no, the wall that I did in that mountain is, you know, much more complicated than anything that you have on Everest. I think on Everest, there's just maybe a 10 meters wall that you actually have to climb with a rope or something like that. And there's stretches that you need to walk on a ladder across.
Hell no.
Yeah. Hell
she's
no.
Like, you've lost her a long time ago. Yeah. She's like, she's staying here.
I don't even like watching, no offense. I don't even like watching movies about Mount Everest.
Really?
I find them to be so frustrating.
Because
I'm like, how did you motherfuckers even decide? I don't feel bad for any of you dying because you chose to do this.
Exactly. Yeah. You've gone a long way out of your way to kill yourself.
Yeah, like you decided to show up and do this for whatever reason.
So people are crazy, but you're crazy. You're a little crazy.
No, but
I'm just kidding. You definitely are.
Listen, but so this was all because you didn't get enough oxygen, right? And your thinking started.
Yeah, I think so.
You see, that's what's happening to my mother, man. I mean,
happened to my grandmother.
Really?
Her skin even started to change color because she wasn't getting enough oxygen.
Yeah.
She died a couple of days later.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's the thing, you know. I remember I went to Mammoth Lakes, and it was 12,000 feet, 13,000 feet. I couldn't breathe very well there. Mm-hmm. The following day, I left early.
Yeah, you feel it. You feel instantly it. You feel it. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's when I decided I'm probably not going to live in Denver unless you really get used to it, right?
Yeah, you do get used to it after a few weeks. That's why people who go to the Everest, they go 2-3 months before. You start climbing up, going down, climbing up. But to really get used to it, your body, to really, really for your blood, all your blood red cells, they change their size, I think. And it takes a few, like at least 6 months or something. I
really?
Guess, yeah.
Jeez.
That's wild. Wow.
So let's talk a little bit about you. You grew up in Israel. And then you went after the army. Where did you travel to?
So first, so straight out of the military, 21, after 2 weeks, I left. And I went with a friend.
Didn't wait very long, huh?
I was sitting with a friend, and he was like, a girl broke up with him. And he's like, oh, I'm so depressed. And his family lives in Paris, and they have an apartment there. And I was like, let's just go. I told him, why don't you just go to Paris, live for a few weeks? And he said, oh, okay, come with me. And I was like, okay. I mean, you just finish the military service, and suddenly everything is possible. I mean, doing the military service.
It's not like that in America. Like, you can't just be like, oh, okay, let's just go to Paris for a couple weeks.
Well, the thing
is,
here
you can go in different states. You know, and you have Mexico, you have Hawaii, you have this.
But it's not that easy just to like move.
No.
Let's go for a couple of weeks. It's expensive as hell.
Well, first of all, so when you do the military service, you get paid a salary, right? But you can't really spend it because you're in the military. So
when you get out, you got lots of money.
Yes. Yeah, so when you go out, you have some money.
Right.
But then you can do two things. So either you start working in Israel, serving more to live, to do your around the world trip.
Right.
Or you do your money saving also abroad. So people move here and start working here. And, you know, there's a lot of Israelis doing here, a lot of things.
Right.
And they make money here, collect money, and they go to travel.
Right.
So, after 2 weeks I left, and I was starting in France for 1 month. Then I came here, did one of those things that Israelis do to save money, and then left to South America, came back, then went on the way back to Israel, stopped in Budapest, met somebody, ended up going back there and living there for 6 years.
Really?
Yeah, so I lived.
So that relationship didn't work out, obviously.
It did
work. Well, it did for six
well,
years.
Well, it did. It did work for 9 years in the end.
Really?
Yeah, but as soon as we started moving away from her home country, from Budapest, from Hungary, then it started
to fall apart.
Yeah, it didn't work out. So.
Really? So in a different place, it didn't work out?
No, I'm happy it
didn't. Yeah, right.
Oh, damn.
But it's amazing how in a different place, a relationship cannot work.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. It's the environment.
No, I think
it's the culture.
Specifically, it was just that we were not, because I wanted to move to New York to make films.
Right.
So suddenly, it wasn't about her.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
When we moved to London, so she could go to the study in a music academy,
then
it was
she was fine.
Right? But when it came to move to like, okay, now it's my turn. I want to move to New York and shoot this script that I wrote. And suddenly, like, So yeah, so it you know, it didn't work out, but I'm happy it didn't work out because
Now what's this pull you had toward movies? At what point did you feel I need to make a movie?
So from a very young age, I wanted to make films.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Why not? You not?
Why
it
not?
Seems so, because you watched films as a kid and it's like, oh, this is awesome. I want to do it.
No, that's true. You know, I mean, no, go ahead.
Yeah. So me and my brother were like watching films when we were young. And then as soon as my parents bought a video camera, we started shooting all kinds of comic sketches and then editing them on the camera and then fooling around with it. But when I grew up, nobody told me that nobody told me, okay, go and do that. Like, why not?
Right.
Because
right.
In Israel, you grow up like either a lawyer or a doctor or an architect or or we're not talking, or the parents. Like,
yeah, lawyer or
that's crazy.
A doctor.
You have to choose, lawyer or doctor. So my sister is a lawyer. And so I just didn't think about it as like anything practical.
Right.
Because the truth is, most people go to film school and then they end up, you know, shooting weddings and stuff like that, which is great. I mean, it's also a good, you know, it's a good job and you can make a lot of money and it's cool also, but it's not what I wanted
to do.
So
not an expression.
So it stayed just like is this distant dream, right? So I went and studied international relations and started my own small internet company and web design and graphic design and just did my own thing. And then throughout the years, there were different points where I was like, okay, I'm going for it. I'm going for the filmmaking thing.
Right.
So when I moved from Budapest to London, I actually wanted to go to the London Film School. But then something, it's a really long story.
Okay.
I had to study Hungarian to get the Hungarian citizenship, so I couldn't go to the school. Wow. It's a long story. But then I didn't do that. But I already applied, but didn't. And then after 2 years, I moved to New York to shoot the script that I wrote.
Right.
But then I exactly ended up breaking up with that girl.
Right. Right? Right.
And then we broke up when I was in Thailand. And I thought,
You guys did a long distance breakup.
No. But I was on. I was on a vacation for
with her.
No, she was. She was doing her
so
own.
So, like
thing.
I'm saying, you guys did a long distance
when,
breakup.
So when I moved to when I moved to New York, she was supposed to move with me, but then she didn't, and then we started being separated from each other.
Right, right.
I think when you're not together physically, it just.
So she let you go to Thailand alone. I mean, that's like a sex destination.
At that point, there's also beautiful. There's other things there.
But that's what it's known for, at least to be.
Everyone says that.
No, that's true. But I mean, it's like to the point where there's a lot of like child sex and stuff like that. But when you try to stay on the adult side, yeah, I mean it's like an adult playground there, right?
So I was living in New York trying to put together shooting this script that I wrote, and I already bought equipment and started teaching myself filmmaking. Was in Thailand, broke up with her, said, "Oh, Thailand, it's really nice. I'll stay for another month."
Right.
And then after 2 weeks, I'm like, "This is really cool. I'll do this for a year, I think." And then I ended up traveling for 5 years because I was working online.
Right.
I just need my laptop, so I basically traveled.
See,
for
everybody's
5 years.
Dream. Wouldn't you love to be able to
just
like
do
travel?
Whatever you want. Like, that's why I envy all the people that are blowing up on YouTube because they can literally just do their job from wherever they want to go or be. Yeah.
Exactly.
So yeah, so I did that for 5 years, and during those 5 years, that's when I also. So it's not just traveling. Traveling is just it's boring. After a few months, it's
really?
Like, yeah, another month. Yeah, you just I can't now. If you tell me let's go take a car, I was like no, I'm not interested.
Oh really? Because you got it out of your system.
How many mountains and lakes and okay, let's take a tour and see this. It's just it becomes boring. So then I started doing these other things, challenging courses and trips. So, for example, I did that mountain climbing trip, right? And I started to become a paragliding pilot, which I did here in Santa Barbara.
Really? I was going to do that back in the 80s. You know what a paraglide is?
I was on one in Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah, I did not enjoy that at all.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, I'm in the movie Final Destination. My parasail's coming down. Like,
is there anything that you do enjoy?
Movies.
Okay, cool.
Talking shit.
Yeah.
Cool.
I just don't like heights. Heights is not my thing. Anything that has to do with heights, I'm not.
But that's the thing. It's not my thing also. But, that's why I force myself to do these things.
No.
Like, if you people who know me, they don't like, why are you doing these things?
Yeah.
You're not like, yeah, I know. But that's I like to challenge myself with things that
I like to
I
challenge
don't
myself
like to do.
With stuff that I feel safe doing. I mean, I challenged myself and I paraglided. I never thought I would do that.
Yeah.
And then when I got down, I was like, well, I could cross that off the bucket list because I'm never doing it again, ever again.
Yeah. So I'm the same, but I usually take it a step forward. So I ended up doing a paragliding solo course here and went after the mountain climbing trip in Nepal to do my first solo flights. In Pokhara in Nepal, which is it's one of the two biggest places where people paraglide.
Right.
And there, when I did my first flight, when I landed, I saw these children running towards me. And I didn't know, like, what the hell, why are they running towards me? And I was afraid that I will hit one of them when I was landing. And then after I landed, I realized that they were asking for me my parachute so they could fold it for me. So I would pay them a little bit money.
Right, right.
And that's how they make their living and help their parents make some money.
Yeah.
And then I told myself, oh, if I'll ever be a filmmaker like I always wanted to be, I'll come here and make a film.
In Nepal.
In Nepal.
Okay.
And so, that's Ashmina.
Right. And let's get into the film now. So the name of the film is Ashmina. What does that mean? Is that a name?
Ashmina is the name of the girl, yeah.
Okay.
The idea was to make five shorts of five women and to name each film about the name.
Oh, I see. Okay. And how did that idea come about? For you, like, to do different films with different women. I mean, I would imagine Ashmina is the first one that came up for you, right?
Yeah.
And so you decided you're going to come back and make a film there. How did you decide what topic to do it on? And Is this like a documentary? It's not a documentary, right?
It's not a documentary. People confuse it to be a documentary.
Right, because it looks so real.
The film won an award just 2 weeks ago, and they kept sending me emails, we love your documentary, we love your documentary. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, thank you. So, which is a bit funny, because first of all, I take it as a compliment, because it's so realistic. But on the other hand, I don't understand how would somebody think it's a documentary, because the shots are very composed nicely and everything. The camera is slow moving, and it's just a very funny
thing. People don't think about that. Wow.
So I think that when I realized, you know, you never, only on hindsight you can understand how you like came up with this. I think that I knew I had this idea to make a film about these packing people, these packing girls and boys who work there in Nepal. So I said, okay, I'm going to write a script, and I wrote it, and okay, I'm going to Nepal, and then I think from that, because I knew that, because when you finish a film, you start sending it to festivals,
right?
And in the first year, you only send it to the biggest festivals, because it doesn't make sense to send it to the smaller festivals, because in reality, in the filmmaking world community and the kind of films that I want to make, there is only literally 3 or 4 festivals that count. Okay, it's like Cannes, Berlin, Venice, Toronto, and Sundance. That's it, basically. Yeah. There's maybe 1.5 more, like maybe Tribeca also, only if you win it. And it's a very small competitive world, and only the biggest festivals count.
So many times you can make a movie and never be considered for any festival, right?
No,
most. They'll take you?
No,
they'll take any film?
No, they accept only, it depends which festivals, but can take only 8 films from, you know, 4,000 submissions. And
that's what I'm saying. So you can make a film and nobody's ever going to see
it.
No, and then you like invested all that time and money.
On your parents, basically, yeah.
So you really have to rise, I mean, to the top for people to notice you. I mean, so if you're in festivals, that says a lot for you and your film.
Yeah, but again, even just these tiny, we're talking about 3, 4, 5 festivals. There's probably 2,000, 5,000 film festivals in the world. And some of them, you know, they have a good name.
That's a lot of festivals.
Sorry?
That's a lot of festivals.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
that
there was that many.
But again, if you really want to, you know, be able to go and raise money to make a film and, you know, get somebody to throw $2-3 million at you, you have to, you know, be there at the top.
Right.
So when I finished Ashmina, I knew, okay, now I have a year just to send it to these festivals before I started to send it to the small festivals. So I knew that I will immediately want to make another film.
Okay.
So then I realized, I guess my thinking was, okay, I will make another film about another woman in a different country.
Right.
So then I can collect them together to this omnibus feature project that I had in mind. So it was all thinking, trying to think outside of the box and trying to think, you know, instead of just making a film, how can I make this more than what it is potentially, right?
You got me pretty curious. So tell us briefly what the film is about. What can we expect to see in the film?
So Ashmina is, so it's about this girl who's 12 years old and she packs the paragliders, all of foreign pilots who fly there. Like I was myself, so I was just a foreign pilot.
So they fold the parachutes and stuff, right?
Yeah, they fold them.
Right.
And then you give them a little bit change.
Right.
And you take the paraglider and you go up the mountain again.
Right. So how did you find actors and cast for the movie?
There's no actors. We just went there.
Really?
I went there with one friend of mine who was my assistant director in my first film. And I made him to be my producer on this project. And we just walked around, you know, we found local people to help us make the film. And we went to film. We went to schools, you know, schools where we could find students, 12, 13 years old girls and boys. But we knew kind of that we wanted to do it to the hero to be a girl. And we just, you know, started interviewing people and taking pictures. And then, you know, I saw somebody who I thought would fit, and she ended up being so wonderful and unbelievable. And also her family was very committed and helpful, because essentially we had to pull her out of school.
That's true.
Which is ironic, because the whole story of the film is that they go to work so they don't go to school, right? But then she caught up with school, and, you know, and of course we paid her what is a very nice salary for Nepal, and for her it was a great opportunity as somebody who would want to be an actress. So for her it was great also. But it's ironic that, you know, we took her from school. So
So crazy that so many different countries have such different lifestyles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you go and travel and You
learn
because some places make more sense than here.
Really?
You think that, yes, I mean, some places, you know, you grow up in a place and you think, oh yeah, this is normal.
Right.
This is what is normal. And then you go to Brazil and you realize, no, this is much, they have it better there.
Really?
Have you been to Brazil?
No.
Every time I visit Brazil, it's like, okay, I have to move here.
Really?
When am I moving here?
Really?
People are nice and people are happy and friendly and they just, you know, just warm and dancing. It's just like a different psyche.
Different mentality, right?
Yeah, different mentality.
Yeah.
Wow. So, very interesting. So you follow the girl.
So somebody gives her. So the story of the film is that somebody gives her a bit too much money.
Mm.
So instead of giving her just a few cents, he gives her a 10 euro bill.
Right.
And she goes home and her dad sees this and is like, oh, cool, 10 euro. And then I don't want to spoil it too much, but then it spins something. Suddenly she wants to get pocket money and she doesn't. And then, so we follow her for 15 minutes and we see how that evolves. So the story is very simple. On purpose, I wanted to make something which is very minimalist and very simple. There's only 17 shots in the film.
Oh, okay.
So it's very, so every scene is composed just
and
one
I noticed
shot.
Also as I scrolled through it that not a lot of talking either, right?
No. The whole script was 6 pages, but I think like the dialogue wise maybe it's 20 lines.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. And the rest is just visual stuff.
Yeah, so visually you follow her actions. That's how you. And so it was completely my purpose to try to do something which is visual and not dialogue based.
Yeah. And pretty dramatic too. I mean, I know some of your shots are very dramatic. Mm. Good for you, man. What kind of camera did you guys use?
We used the Red Dragon that they have there in Kathmandu. Somebody has a camera that he...
Red Dragon, is that the name of it?
Mm.
Oh, never heard of it, but okay.
The movie?
No,
it's a camera.
Red Dragon.
It's a type of camera. Yeah.
Oh, I was like, that's a movie.
Probably there is. I bet there is a Red Dragon.
Cannibal's in that. Hannibal Lecter? Who's that guy?
Probably. That's Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, he's in that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought we were making.
No, I'm being dead serious.
Oh, wait
a
minute.
Movie.
Red Dragon was
really?
The sequel of something
it's
else.
Not Silence Red Dragon. It's Red something else. It's not Red. No. It's Red. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, Red something. I thought it was
Let's
Red
check
Dragon.
It. Let's find it.
I thought it's because he has a dragon tattoo on his back.
Maybe.
But someone like is obsessed with him, and he becomes like his copycat serial killer.
Right.
That's an old.
I love that film. That's a classic film. I like old school movies.
It was
like
a
that.
Sequel of something. Was it Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah. Because Hannibal Lecter was Hannibal Lecter in that movie.
Right.
And he was like helping the cops try to figure out who it was. What a good movie.
Yeah, I know. But the worst part was when they showed him skinning the fucking girls, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like,
are you talking about on the first one?
In the first one.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. I can't get it out of my mind. That's why I'm saying I'm never watching that movie.
So for me, the worst part was when he was cooking his brains for dinner and he was like at the table still talking. Like, and he had no idea that they like just took a chunk of his brain and eating it for dinner. I'm like, this is messed up.
Gross.
Yeah. So that's cool, man. And so you're running it around the circuits and everything. And that's cool. You get to travel again, right?
Yeah.
But this time to cities more than to
to
climb out.
So, like, where do you actually, like, live? Like, where's your home?
So I'm based in London.
Oh, okay.
So I have an apartment in London. That's where I'm based. But I'm just traveling a lot for making the films and going to festivals.
Why in London? Do you like it?
So, no, not because of that.
No, really?
No.
No? Wow.
I'm very tired. It's so busy. It's incredibly busy.
Is it more busy than here?
It's different busy, yeah. Yeah, it's different. Because here, there's at least everything is
spread out.
Right.
Yeah, it's super concentrated.
But
going back, why London? So after I finished these 5 years of traveling... So I said I did all these different courses around, like, here and there, this, blah, blah, blah. And then one of the things that I thought about doing was, oh, maybe I should now go back to the filmmaking idea, and I will go and I will do 3 months in the London Film School, because the London Film School, it's a 2-year program, but it's made up of 6 terms, each one 3 months, and 1 month break, and then you do another one. So I thought, oh, I will just do 3 months there.
Right.
And I'll go to London. And I will be there for a few months and do that and then continue with my travels. But then as soon as they accepted me to the school, I was like, okay, this is awesome. I'll just do the 2 years. But after a week, I was like, no, it's not awesome. I'm leaving. So then I left after 3 months. But it put me in this trajectory of this filmmaking. So it just put me on this tunnel. Like, okay, I'm doing this. Like, screw traveling. I did enough of that. I've done all this different stuff. Like, I literally don't have, you spoke about bucket list. I don't know. It's done. I've done everything I wanted to, essentially, almost. Yeah. So, except of making films. So I started making, so I moved to London for the London Film School.
Uh-huh.
Left after 3 months. And then made my first, second, third film. And
Oh, wow. You thinking of moving to Hollywood anytime soon?
No, I don't think so.
And you got a family here, too.
I have.
So why would you not consider it?
Who knows? Because now I'm here taking meetings with different people who watch my films and like them. And, you know, I'm first of all, my first feature, it should be, I want to make something which is in line with my previous films, with my last two shorts.
Right.
So, and that actually is the third chapter. So I shot the first and the second. So the third chapter, I'm going to expand it into a feature.
I see.
And that's kind of, and it's going to be shot in Israel, actually.
Right.
If I will go through with that project. Yeah. And that's kind of like a more European, non-commercial, art house type of film, which is the kind of films that I want to make and enjoy watching. But after that, you know, I'm also interested in making stuff which is more commercial. So I'll be happy to make films here, too.
Mm. Now, let me ask you, how does this fit in? Because it's talking about your film as far as it brings up the threat of tourism.
Mm-hmm.
To certain places and stuff, and it gets pretty deep into this. You didn't mention anything about that. What? How is this related to her story?
So it's actually a very big problem now in Nepal, and we spoke about it in connection to the Everest.
Right.
Too many people climb, right? So in that particular area, too many people paraglide, right?
Okay.
And actually, every few months, somebody dies there paragliding. Like, when we
the shit that people
do. It's like, hello, are you not watching the news, dude? Do something else.
Yeah, people don't watch the news.
They
don't know. So
I mean, I don't watch the news, but like, I be doing my research before I do things.
So somebody can get killed, then they close the mountain for 2 days, and then they open it up again, and then new tourists come. And
So
the story in the film, like I said, it says that he pays her too much money, and that affects the relationship with her parents.
Oh.
So the film, one of the themes in the film is the effect of you know, tourists coming
tourism
to places
being like disruptive to their way of life.
Absolutely disruptive. Wow. And if you go to that place, and Nepal is such a traditional country,
mm-hmm.
And a traditional society, and then all these tourists go there with money and just with their, you know, behaviors, and then people move there and open. So the story of how the paragliding industry started there is actually very interesting. Just one guy came there 20 years ago, and he said, oh, I can climb that mountain and paraglide, right?
Right.
And then he thought, oh, I can, open your company and take tourists up and fly them for like $100, whatever. And then the local people saw this and was like, oh, can you teach us to be paragliders? And then over a period of 20 years, it becomes this monster industry, unregulated, with people getting injured, and then the locals, they learned how to paraglide, and after a few years, they came to the foreigners who were, you know, working there or teaching there. It's like, okay, this is our country. Bye. Thank you for teaching us.
Yeah,
and then they kick them out.
Wow.
Yeah, you can just make 3 films just about this industry.
Right. And now, let me ask you, we're totally out of time, but I wanted to ask you about paragliding.
Yeah.
What if you land, like, in the middle of nowhere? How the hell do you get back?
You walk, climb, or
coast? Walk?
See, I didn't paraglide like that. I parasailed. Yeah. So I did it on a boat.
Oh, okay.
But this is like a hang glider. I mean, you jump off the mountain and you're like
over the place. Mine wasn't like that. We were connected to the boat, and then they let you go like slowly, and then all of a sudden you're just like raising. Before you know it, the boat looks like this little tiny speck below
and
you.
You're really high.
Yeah. All you had was like click, click, and I started screaming, but no one can hear you screaming. They just, and they think you're having a great time, and I'm like, go get me the fuck out.
And you went up alone?
No, I went with because I was filming a reality three shows, so two went at a time. And I was literally next to the, well, I was cool. I was like trying to be calm. And the girl next to me goes, did you hear that clicking sound? I go, we're going out. This is the end.
I did that with a friend too in Lake Tahoe a couple of years ago.
All right. Well, we got to wrap up. We have Dekel Berntsen in the studio. The film is Ashmina. And also Anna. And if you guys want to check it out, where can they see it? Can they go to the festivals and see it?
They can go on the website and see in what festival it screens.
Okay. What's the website?
So it's annashortfilm.com and annafilm.com. And if they look me up, my website, dekelberntsen.com, and there's links to the other websites.
So right. Find everything. Very cool. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're full of a lot of stories. You probably have a couple books in you eventually.
Yeah, one day.
Yeah. But video is better. Well, no, I like books too. But video, and not just video, but film, you have a lot of stuff you're going to leave behind you. But that's too soon to talk about. You're still young and everything. Come back to visit us. Tell us what you've done.
Thank you.
And thanks for all the travel information. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Danny, thank you. I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
We'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Danny, only on LA Talk Radio.